This episode of A Medic's Mind is brought to you by Winter Tickle Press, a premier publishing house who specializes in nonfiction mental wellness books based on lived experiences. Titles include Save My Life School, Daily Lessons of Save My Life School, Brainstorm Revolution, and stories Finding Your Wings, all available for order through Chapters Indigo, Barnes & Noble, and Amazon US, UK, and Canada. You can follow Winter Tickle Press on Facebook at Winter Tickle Press, or find them on Twitter at Winter Tickle. Gentlemen, welcome to A Medic's Mind podcast. Thank you very much for coming out. And this is kind of a special episode for me because this is episode 100. Yes, 100. I know. Thank you. Thank you. No, please. Oh, wow, more. Oh, God, you guys, seriously, just knock it off already. You guys, you're making a guy blush over here. Oh, okay. Okay. All right. Oh, jeez. Well, when you've made it, you've made it, right? What am I supposed to do? No, seriously, thank you, guys. Episode 100. I know that these things came out kind of quick, fast and furious in the beginning. And, you know, like I said, this thing has kind of been a therapy outlet for me. But it's also been kind of eye-opening, too. I've had a lot of people reach out to me that I've spoken about on previous episodes. And I've got a lot of really positive feedback from reading my blogs on here too, and I can't thank you guys enough for the support, because honestly, it really, on the nights that I feel alone, this thing helps me to not kind of fixate on that feeling of being alone, because I have you guys to talk to. I have people like you that are out there supporting me and listening, so that means a huge, huge amount to me. Thank you so much. Episode 100. Yeah, I did it. Speaking of episode 100, I have a pretty special episode on this one. So not only is it sponsored by Winter Tickle Press, but I get to talk to my good friend and my publisher, Heather Down from Winter Tickle Press. And I really love this episode, actually. It was a lot of fun to do. Having a conversation with Heather is always a good time. You know, she gets my humor, and she's a pretty charismatic lady. And I consider her to be... I consider her to be family, to be completely honest. She's such an important part of my life, and has helped me through some really, really hard spots and some rough patches. And she's always there to check in and see how I'm doing. And you know, I'm truly blessed to have the people that I have in my life, and to have her in my life is 100% a blessing. So this episode is great. I really had a lot of fun. I think you guys are going to enjoy it too, because I get to talk to Heather, who is the founder of Winter Tickle Press. She's also a writer, published author, and she is the one who gave me the opportunity to become a published writer myself by giving me a spot within the anthology of Brainstorm Revolution. And so we talk a little bit about that. We talk kind of how that came to be. We talk about my time in Bellwood, what it was like for me, and what it was like for her on the other side of the coin, and then we talk about A Medic's Mind, the book, tentatively titled, that is hopeful to come out sometime near the end of the year. But we talk about that, talk about some of our work on it, and we kind of get into some backstory or some potential good news for the podcast. There may be some episodes where we talk about backstories of the stories in Brainstorm. So that would be really cool. Having some more backstory about those stories that I've read, that maybe you have read as well, hearing about what spawned them, what helped them come to life. So I really had a lot of fun in this episode. I had a great time kind of learning some things about Heather and learning some things about Brainstorm and how it came to be. And overall, it was just a really easy, conversational-styled podcast, and I really had a lot of fun. And I couldn't think of a better person to help me ring in episode 100 other than Heather, because she was there for me on day one. My first podcast came out, I think, a day before my first book signing. And the very second episode is about that book signing, albeit the audio quality is terrible, but I had a $23 USB microphone. What do you want from me? I have since upgraded from then. I have a Rode NT1 now, Rode Procaster microphone. Amazing microphone. I really love this thing. But I have since upgraded my audio setup with a mock sound mitigating booth as well. Anyway, enough of that. You don't give a shit, I'm sure. Anyway, this is episode 100. This is me talking to my good friend Heather, founder and owner of Winter Tickle Press. Please enjoy and sit back, grab a coffee or tea or whatever you're doing, and have a listen.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. This is fun.
Yeah.
I just started thinking because when you said that, I'm like, there are so many backstories that I know things about that other people don't know, that I'm really blessed or privileged to have knowledge of how some of these things came about.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting once in a while, even to read part of the story and then say, did you know originally it was this way and this is how this evolved?
Yeah, when I read that, I thought that'd be really cool because, the thing about books that I love is that, I mean, as much as the author puts something out there for you to take away from what they have said, but it's also up to interpretation too.
But then
sometimes when you hear the author do like if they're at a signing and they do a bit of a read and they tell about what made them write that, it's sometimes so juxtaposed to what you were thinking, or sometimes it complements what you were thinking. And I find that to be absolutely amazing.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. I love those moments when you get opportunity to kind of see a window into the process, I guess.
Absolutely. Like there's a movie coming out pretty soon called Token, and it's about J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yes.
And I'd always heard rumors back in like going through school because I read all the Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, and I loved those books. The Hobbit especially. It's a long book, but I really enjoyed it. But I heard rumors that he came up with the idea of that whole story by trying to explain what World War I was like to his son. And so he had, like, the myths and rumors that I heard was that, like, the orcs are kind of the Canadians, the elves are kind of the British, and the humans, or can't remember what they're called in the story now, but... like Aragorn, he kind of represents the Americans, and the orcs are obviously the axis of evil. And so, yeah, so in order to tell his story about good, or his son about good versus evil, he kind of told the story of war, but he made it in like this fantasy world so as not to scare his kid, I guess.
And
now this movie, it looks like they're sort of touching on how The Hobbit and how that stuff came to be. And it seems like there might be some truth to that. So, I mean, that hearing backstories to stuff is absolutely mind blowing. So, I'm more than happy to listen to backstories and hear about backstories to do with Brainstorm, or any story really, because it's awesome.
Well, thank you. I look forward to that. I think that would be a lot of fun and interesting. Once in a while, mm-hmm. kind of to throw one in there, to mix it up a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
For sure. So, Brainstorm, I don't know any of the behind the scenes stuff, but it seems to be doing pretty well. I mean, we've had, I think, five or six book signings now?
Yeah. We seem to be all the way from Ottawa to Barrie to Mississauga to Brampton, Oshawa. So, it seems to be doing well. It's certainly the people that read it receive it well, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, being part of some of the book signings, one of the most unique aspects. I mean, I've never done anything like that before. So some of the more unique aspects is like when people come up and they take a look at the book cover, or you hear that inevitable question, "What is this?"
Right? Yeah.
and you get to sit there and explain it to them. And when their face kind of lights up with like intrigue as they hear more about what it's about, or you see them kind of melt into this. Oh, somebody's actually talking about this.
Those are
really, really unique things to be around when that happens.
It is interesting. And the funny part is The back cover was kind of not thought about, to be honest. It was kind of an afterthought that I had. Let's throw everybody's picture on the back. I didn't think anything of it. And what I noticed the most at these signings is the first thing people do is look at the back and look at all the faces of the authors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of serendipitous that that happened, because it certainly wasn't on purpose. And then sometimes people might recognize a face or two. Here in Barrie or the GTA, I've even had people turn the book over and say, oh, what is so-and-so doing on that? And I said, well, they contributed a story. And sometimes people don't even know their friends or people they know. In fact, it happened yesterday at an event. They turned it over and they said, what is LA's picture doing on there? I said, well, she contributed a story. So the back cover ended up being a great way to start that conversation that you're talking about.
Yeah. And it's also a unique cover, because I can't think of any other book that comes to memory that has a tapestry of authors on the back of it. You know, occasionally within the book there might be like a foreword, or at the back of the book, you know, somebody that helped, or even on the front cover there'll be like a little presented by, but on the back I've never seen you know, the tapestry of all these different authors come together. So it's a unique back cover. Like, the whole project itself is really something.
That is true. I never thought of that. I know with some other anthologies, sometimes they will have the person's picture at the end of a story,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
right within the text of the book. The problem with that is to print it, it would be then black and white.
Right.
Because in the inside of the book, it's just too cost prohibitive. But at the back, you can have full color, and it's kind of neat to see the variety of people.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, obviously color gives people more life anyway. So
mm-hmm.
I found, for me, one of the most unique parts about that cover, other than just being a part of it, which is still surreal, was I met maybe you and actually before the book, I hadn't even met you guys, really, I don't think.
This is true.
So when I saw the back cover, I knew of Natalie and I knew of you, but I didn't really know of anybody else, and I certainly hadn't met anybody else. And then when I got to attend the first book signing, I got to meet Courtney and Patricia and Catherine and all these other numbers of people. They gave life to those pictures, and now they have personalities to those pictures. So when I look in the back of the book, I see my friends, and that is
right.
It's a really unique and really special thing to have.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think for just an objective reader, when because there's people I haven't met on the back cover, mm-hmm. and I read their story, and then when I flip the book back over, I feel like I know them in a way.
Right.
And so that is another unique aspect of the book that I really, and I that might be just subjective to me, but I that's kind of how I've, you know, how I've taken the back of the book.
Well, as the publisher, that sort of happened for me as well. I had a unique perspective because, you know, I've worked with everybody individually and they hadn't met each other yet. So I had a little bit of a different overview.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fun to watch when everybody did meet. It was like instant family. And I have a connection with all these different people. I sort of feel like the center of a wheel.
Right.
And there are all these spokes going out. But it was so fun to watch everybody connect so swiftly. For example, you and me on mm-hmm. paper probably would never be friends in real life. And I mean that in the nicest way possible, honestly. And by the way, just a total aside for anybody listening, if you've noticed that Matthew's, if you follow him on social media and you find that maybe his posts seem a little tamer, I will take all thank you cards and hate mail. Completely my responsibility. Depending on your perspective, yes.
I think it's for the best.
But seriously, on paper, we probably are very different people and probably wouldn't have walked into the same circle. Would you agree with that? Is that a fair statement?
Well, absolutely. I think I could say that probably about, you know, 90, if not 99% of the people on the back of the book, that, you know, we all come from different circles and different experiences.
Right.
But I mean, yes, specifically with you and I, you know, when you look at things just strictly as a on paper level, yeah, there really isn't a lot there to go on. But in juxtaposition to that, I now consider you to be one of my closest friends.
And I would say the same of you. Absolutely. 100%.
You've helped me through a lot of really kind of murky and tough times, in my life. And when I was in Bellwood and, I first got that first package, I had no idea I was going to get one from you. I didn't know what was going on. So when I got called to the desk and the guy's like, "Hey, you have a package here." And I'm like, "No, I don't." I'm like, "I don't know what the hell you're talking about." And it was a box, like a decent sized box. And he goes to cut into it. And I was like, don't cut into it. That could be a bomb. I'm not expecting anything.
No, that's funny.
Yeah. And then, so you sent me a package a day for the duration of my time in Bellwood. And that act of opening up a package, because I have to open up the package in front of one of the support counselors,
right,
just to make sure there's no paraphernalia or whatever in there, right? And it became a thing. It actually became kind of a bonding thing between not only me and the other people that were in Bellwood, but with me and the staff as well, because they were curious of what I was getting, and they wanted to help put together the anagram. So it was really cool to have somebody go through that kind of effort to do that for me. It was deeply, deeply humbling, and I've honestly never had anybody do that. So that definitely meant a lot to me, and it's something that I definitely carry with me in a very fond place in memory. So thank you.
Well, it was a lot of fun to do. I had no idea if you would even get the packages because I didn't know the rules there. And I want to share something with you because I don't know if you remember this, but I have a piece of paper in front of me. It has frayed edges and it says, "I gotta say though, waking up without the companionship of a hangover is a truly glorious thing. Living day by day without the weighted heft of the lingering fog of intoxication is intoxicating." So I don't know if you remember, but you actually wrote me a letter while you were in there.
I do remember the letter. I just don't remember anything in it.
I have it right in front of me. And so that was a paragraph from the letter. And I did. There were two reasons why I kind of put that in there as one of the things to open. And I gave you a task. Please write me this letter. It was a self-addressed envelope. One, I thought it would be cool for you to write a letter. And two, I wanted to know if they were letting you open the packages.
Yes.
And I knew that if I got a letter that the packages were getting to you because I sent them in installments. I didn't send you all 42. How many days were you there?
Yeah, 42, yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't want to send 42 packages and then you wouldn't get them to the end. So I did it installments, so maybe 10 days at a time.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was really good. It was awesome.
But then when I got that letter, I remember being like, it totally made my day. And it was cool to know that, okay, I know that what I left to communicate was actually being communicated. And so I still have that letter. I keep it safe in my filing cabinet. It's cool. Like, I'll let you read it one day.
Sure.
See,
yeah,
what you wrote.
I honestly can't remember a lot. Yeah,
it's one of the nicest letters I've ever got. So thank you.
Oh, thank you.
And definitely the other thing that I think kind of solidified it for me was I met you. I didn't know you in real life at this point.
Right.
Face to face, just social media, et cetera, was kind of finding out that we kind of had an experience of grief.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, before we really even knew each other.
Yeah.
And we were coming up on the same anniversary at the same time. And grief hits people differently at different times.
Mm-hmm.
So I've never really told you this, but I am really grateful that you were kind of there for me during that time, because even though you hadn't experienced what I had experienced, you were experiencing grief and could relate. And because you were open and you always say at the end of your podcast, keep talking, because you spoke first, I was able to share stuff that I didn't share with anybody else. So
oh, wow.
I appreciate that. And you're doing a great work with not just your podcast, but just as a friend in general. And just by talking and being open, you allow others who might be experiencing something similar to feel comfortable enough.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you.
Well,
so thank you. Yeah.
Thank you for the kind words. I appreciate it.
And this was all going down when we were having our first book signing. So to all these people who I felt like the center of the wheel holding together, I had an experience the November, not this past November, but the November before. And I didn't grieve right away.
Mm-hmm.
And it hit me when coming up to the first anniversary of it. And that's when all this other stuff was going around, all this great stuff at the same time. So it's kind of weird going through grief juxtaposed to some really cool things happening in your life.
Yeah, it's a really, it's kind of an odd thing. I mean, in Bellwood is when I really first started to digest my mom. And the loss that that meant. I mean, I was heartbroken when I first got the news, obviously, and I was sad and despondent throughout the days and weeks post my mom's death. But I really didn't feel it because I was too busy drinking and trying not to feel it. I was doing everything I could. I was, you know, lamenting online, trying to make those around me feel as miserable as I was feeling. And I think that's what made some of the vehemency of my interactions with people online so bitter, because I was angry, and I'm not going to say that I'm not angry now. It's just that I understand that I'm angry, and there's something right. that happens when you come to an understanding of something as opposed to just reacting to something.
Right. Well, I'm going to read you something that you wrote to me in the next paragraph then that totally supports what you just said. You told me, "I have really been feeling the loss of my mom in here. I think perhaps the newfound clarity that comes with sobriety, along with the anxiety and apprehension of being in a place like this, has given birth to a new wave of bereavement." So you were definitely feeling that.
Yeah.
And you expressed it quite eloquently in your letter.
Thank you. Yeah, I actually sat outside when I wrote that letter. There's a little coffee table I used to go and sit at because it was in the summer that I was there. So I used to sit at this coffee table because there wasn't a lot of people around and it was kind of a quiet place.
Oh, nice.
And I just sat there with the notepad that you had given me and the pens. And I didn't really know what to write at first. And pretty much that letter that you got is just from beginning to end is just what I sat down and started writing. It was just literally me thinking at one go, just kind of writing stuff as I went. And
four full pages. So your brain must have been going.
Yeah, it was going a little bit.
Yeah.
I didn't think I wrote four pages.
Yep. Four full pages. Single space, too.
Jeez.
I used to be a teacher, so I know all the tricks, you know, every other line.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So if you don't mind going into a bit of a backstory with that. So you were a teacher before. What made you get into to wanting to write or B, wanting to publish writing? Like how did that transition happen for you?
Okay. So I was a teacher for 15 years, mostly grade 7-8, because 12-year-olds are the kindest, loveliest people on the planet. So I chose that age. I really like that age because they're old enough that you can have a proper conversation with. But they're kind of old enough to hate you too. So it had its moments, but I really enjoyed teaching. So originally when I went to university, I went in, my degree is actually in psychology, which is strange because I thought maybe I would like to do, research. And then I met a boy, like most people that can change your life pretty fast, and didn't want to commit to 8 more years of post-grad and not be sure that I wanted it, loved it. So I went into teaching. Kind of got stuck there for a while. But while teaching, we had an author come in and talk to the kids. And I just said afterwards, you know, how do you get published? And he gave me some tips. So I started writing and submitting to publishers, and I got a lot of rejection letters. So that was fun, but it motivated me. But finally, I gave up. I just gave up. I sent off one last letter to a magazine about my daughter and I. So my three kids were adopted when they were older. When I was all of 26 years old, I got a 7, 8, and 9-year-old kid. In one fell swoop, but that's for another time. So I wrote a little story about my daughter and I and sent it away to a Canadian craft magazine, And then I packed everything up and decided I'm not going to be a writer. And 8 months later, they called and wanted to publish it.
That's amazing.
So, you know, and then I realized what I was doing before, I wasn't writing about what I knew. I was writing fiction. And when I started into nonfiction and writing about myself, I actually was quite, was met with a fair amount of success as far as being accepted, and wrote over 50 articles for different magazines through a couple years, and actually had a few books published in the States, humor books. Humor was kind of my wheelhouse.
Yeah, you are quite the comical writer. Your blog is something I enjoy perusing through.
Oh, thank you. I like to look at the world kind of through a comical lens. And my first book, I'm kind of ashamed of it now, but it was called The Perfect Man and Other Great Works of Fiction. it's still in print, sadly. But they had to change the name because the publishing house almost got sued over it.
Oh,
because
wow.
The Perfect Man apparently was trademarked, the phrase.
Oh, really?
Yes. So anyway, they had to change it for Looking for Mr. Right. And then I did a follow-up with, what was that one called? Ignorance is Bliss, Things Men Don't Know and Don't Want to Know. this is the first time you're hearing this, isn't it? I can tell by the silence. I got over that phase. Don't worry. And then I did kind of a lot of inspirational sort of writing for that company. And then I wrote a young adult historical fiction that was published by Dundurn, which is kind of a boutique publisher right down in Church Street in Toronto, and they do a lot of Canadiana. That wasn't met with a lot of success, though, because it came out right when Harry Potter did.
Oh.
And, yeah, nobody wants to know about 1800s Newfoundland when you could read about Hogwarts.
Yeah, you got some stiff competition there.
Yeah. So that didn't do so well. But in the meantime of writing, the Ontario government was going through some growing pains, change of government, change of curriculum. And we didn't really have a lot as teachers to share. So we're independently developing stuff across the province. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to have a hub where we upload our units of study and just share it, PDF format. And this was probably close to 2000, maybe 1999. But teachers weren't ready for that. They wanted physical books. So I took one of my units and turned it into a physical book, and all of a sudden it sold like crazy. And I had a lucky break that the teachers have a magazine for their kind of union. They picked up a story on my website, and it goes out to, I don't know, I think it's 125,000 readership. And that is sort of what blew up Winter Tickle Press.
Wow.
So I was lucky. And then we developed a resource for the grade 10 literacy test that became the best selling in the province. And although we don't have the same one, we have a new one since then, but it still is the best selling for students who are studying for their literacy test. So that's kind of the backstory. But then 4 or 5 years ago, I met a guy by the name of Neil Crone. So he used to be on Little Mosque on the Prairie, that CBC show, and he does a lot of commercials. And so he had a lot of stuff that he wanted to get published, and we worked really well together. So Winter Tickle Press kind of went into the general trade at that point. So we published a few of his titles, and then we were available in Indigo. We got to be a vendor with them. And then just a couple years ago, my neighbor, who normally is very shy and retiring, insisted that I meet a woman by the name of Natalie Harris. So Kim went out of her comfort zone to make sure that we met. And because of that, Save My Life School was born. So Natalie Harris's story, a memoir, a mental health memoir.
It's an incredible book, by the way.
It is. I know I'm biased, but it really is.
I thought it was incredible even before I really got to know who she was as a person.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I'm not just saying it because I'm biased. I'm certainly biased now.
Now that you know her, yeah.
100%. Because there's a thing about Natalie that most people who don't know her might not know. Once you get to know her, you're going to love her. It's just going to happen.
Yes.
You can't fight it. It's inevitable. So
there's a charisma and a warmth there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Draws you right in.
Yeah. I think I said once that there's an elegance to her intellect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that rings true, especially now in her current role.
Yeah.
Seeing the kind of work that she's doing and the advocacy that she's promoting for that city. She's somebody to aspire to. Absolutely. So this book that she wrote and that you put together and worked on with her, Save My Life School, it really is a special piece of literature for sure.
I like the honesty of it. Mm-hmm. It's very truthful, and you don't always feel that when you read a memoir, that mm-hmm. people seem to polish or massage things a little bit. And I, of course, there are things you don't want to put in a memoir. I mean, there's boundaries. People need boundaries, and I was all for that. But just what she did choose to share was so incredibly honest and changed my perception on specifically the topic of suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that reading that manuscript could change my understanding, I thought was powerful. If it changes mine, how many other people could it affect?
Yeah.
So I just really, really, really appreciate that book and what it's done for me personally and professionally. I can't be more grateful. So I'm totally with you on that. And then, of course, we met Courtney at an event, and the three of us kind of had an idea to do this anthology, and from that brainstorm idea was born. And since then, I'm pretty much committed to books now that are going to be in the mental health field, or lived experiences, I should say, not so much field, but because I feel passionately about it.
Yeah. Well, it shows. It really does show. I mean, the amount of work that went into not only finding the authors for the book, but the way the book was put together, the structure of the book, the event that we had on the 14th of February, the Unconventional Love Stories, the online presence, like it shows your passion and your dedication shows. It comes through very, very visibly on all those aforementioned things. So I again just offer a humble thank you for letting me be a part of it, because it is a pretty special thing.
Well, I am so glad that you are a part of it, because you're integral to the whole process for sure. And it's funny, because in the very, very, very beginning, I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this before, because the reason I even learned about you and your writing is Nat had shared it on social media. And I remember reading one of your posts and thinking, this guy can write. This is amazing. You paint a picture, you're Picasso with words. It's really awe-inspiring. But pre-Bellwood, you went to some seriously dark places.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Yes, you did. And I'm like, he can write, but I don't know if this is usable in general trade market.
Yeah.
So that was my thought process. But at the point when you were in Bellwood, I was at the point where I offered you a contract for your own book.
Yeah.
And then I had this terrifying, I mean, I'm being brutally honest here with you. So I had this terrifying thought for a moment. I offered him a contract, and I've only read what he's written while he's an addict.
Yep.
I actually had a moment, and we've talked about it, so it's not a surprise. I had a moment where I thought, oh, shit, can this guy write when he's sober? I have no idea. And your first blog when you were sober was even better. So let me tell you, I was relieved.
I got to tell you, I was too, because I didn't know if I could write sober either. Because I mean, writing had sort of just become therapy for me. It wasn't, it's never been something that I've done. You know,
okay.
I didn't do it as a kid. I didn't do it, when I was working as a medic or anything. You know, but the only thing that I wrote as a medic was patient care reports. That was
not quite the same thing, eh?
Not so much.
You couldn't use the word obfuscated or pernicious in those?
I did tend to occasionally use obfuscated.
I read enough of your stuff now. I know your favorite words.
they're nice sounding words.
They are.
They get the point across. Like, what does that mean? It means that. Okay. Yeah. So
you were relieved as well, eh?
100%. Because not only was I relieved that I could still find this therapeutic relief for me, but it felt good that I still had the ability to tell a story, like my story. I still had the ability to talk with people, because feeling alone and feeling isolated is a huge part of my struggle with depression and post-traumatic stress. And my blog, in a way, it really helped me feel not quite so alone, because I knew I was putting it out into the etherverse, not really knowing who was picking it up, who was whatever. But occasionally I would get like an email from somebody who had read it.
Right.
And they would say, you know, give me some feedback on it. Hey, this is a nice piece. It's a great piece. But specifically that piece that I wrote when I got out of Bellwood, the return, I got a bunch of emails from people that had been reading my prior stuff up to now. And they were all like, thanks for writing about this. Or, you know, hey, thanks for being so transparent. I'm so happy you're back. You know, good luck to you. Things. And it made me feel, like I can still do this. Like this right. blog, this medic's mind, like I still have my mind to talk about. I'm not defined by the things that I've been through and things that I've seen. People just, you know, I can still talk to people without just reliving the trauma. And I think that was a huge kind of awakening, is a little self-aggrandizing, but it was a huge thing for me. It was a big moment.
Yeah, it would be. It would be. It's like a realization, a self-realization.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a big deal. And I was relieved too. You know, you never know. Some people, they only write well when they're sad, or they only write well under certain circumstances because that's when they feel the most emotional.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I should have waited until he was out a couple weeks before I offered the contract. And to me, it was way more important that you are sober than writing. So
had I known that you had this trepidation, I would have like mailed you a manuscript that was written in crayon with like a backwards E in there every now and then.
Yeah, I could see that. That would have been actually kind of funny. I do get your humor, which you may not think I do, but I really do. I keep my sense of humor on the down low sometimes, but yeah. That would have made me laugh for sure.
You know who didn't get my humor or the humor of my friends was the SC staff at Bellwood, and I'll tell you why.
Really?
So we have a mutual friend or an acquaintance. He's a friend of mine, Simon. I don't know if I should say his last name, but Simon.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, and so he also sent me a package in the mail.
Yes.
And
okay.
And so I get called down, and I had just received one of your packages like a day previous. So I was like, "What's going on? Like, is this another one?" And I look and it says Simon. I was like, "Oh, Simon sent me something." So of course the SC people have to open it up, and the first thing that comes out is offensive crayons, and there's an effigy of a middle finger on the front of the box.
And then oh my goodness.
That's followed by the world's most offensive coloring book.
Oh my God.
And you can only imagine what kind of things you can color in there.
Oh my goodness.
There is some
Do I need to call him about social media or?
There's a chance. The final thing that came trundling out of that envelope was a medieval miniature catapult that you could fire toothpicks from. Like a medieval crossbow.
So he sent you a weapon.
He did, yeah.
He sent you a weapon.
And the staff is opening this and looking at it. And like one of the girls is flipping through the coloring book. And like, there's big old veiny things in there. Like it's not. I just stood there in complete horror, and I was like, I don't know what is going on.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh wow. So did they hold on to that? Like they probably didn't let you walk away with it.
No, the only thing I was allowed to walk away with was the crayons. That's the only thing that I was allowed.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Well, actually their website will tell you because I was trying to find out if I could even do this, right? I finally found something after I'd already sent the first package that makes sure that you don't bring with you as a client and things that I didn't think of, like you're not allowed to bring mouthwash with alcohol in it. And what other things did they have listed, like dice or playing cards you know, and pornography, which I could see as a given. But the other things I hadn't really thought through, I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense, because you have a variety of people dealing with a variety of challenges and you don't want to put things in there that are going to impede recovery, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's it was an eye-opening place for me, too, about the things that were and weren't allowed.
Interesting.
And it was certainly like the more I got to learn of it, I was like, oh, this makes total sense. Like,
right.
Makes sense to me. And believe me, I didn't want a miniature catapult I could fire toothpicks.
Oh my goodness. It probably made them laugh on the inside, the staff.
They were pretty reticent on the outside.
Okay. You don't think they went home and had a giggle?
The girl looked absolutely horrified going through this. Like, she's like, who did somebody create this? Like, who made this horrible thing?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Oh, that's yeah. And then funny. I'll tell you a story about the contract that you sent me.
Okay.
So there was one of the SCs that worked there. Her name was Taylor. And she is just stunning. And very smart. Like, don't get me wrong. She's great at what she does. So it's more than just the whole looks thing. But she was around one day when I had to open up one of the packages, and it just so happened to be one of the last ones, which had the contract in it.
Okay.
And so I open up this contract and I look at it, and when my mind realizes what it is, I start to get a little teary-eyed, whatever. And then so she's like, and again, like, they don't know me all that well, so they don't know my humor super good. So And she goes, oh, he's crying. I was like, I'm not crying. You're crying. And then she's like, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I'm like, no, I was joking. Of course I'm crying. Are you kidding me? She just sent me a contract. Yes, I'm crying. But yeah, so I think I blew my chances there.
Well, you never know.
Oh, I do. Oh, yes. You're talking to the guy that spit McChickens in women's faces before. Yes, I'm aware.
That's kind of funny. You never did sign it, though. You know that?
Yeah, you know what? I should probably do that.
Do you have it still, or do I have to print another one?
Oh, I absolutely have it. Yeah. I got, okay. I kept everything.
Yeah, okay. I think you told me after that you were worried about contracts, because the last time you signed one, it got you into some kind of trouble.
Yeah, it got me in the army.
So I haven't really pursued it. We've gone forward on faith that this is going to happen without a contract, but I'm cool with that because I trust you.
Yeah, I'm happy to sign one. I trust is definitely a mutual thing here. But one of the things that's been blowing me away lately is you've been sending me some stuff that's typeset of the book that you and I are working on.
So excited.
Oh, man,
I'm so excited about this. It's funny how things just kind of evolve. I use the word evolve from revolution, but even with Brainstorm Revolution, just a quick backstory, and then we'll talk about your structure and your upcoming book. But I remember talking with Matt and Courtney, how are we going to organize this? We don't want to put all stories about PTSD in one section. This is not a clinical book. This is just personal stories. How do you divide up such varied stories? And it's funny, the structure always seems to be one of the last steps in the process for me. I don't know why. And I remember just looking at the word revolution and waking up one morning, and I think I called Matt early in the morning, which is not always a nice thing to do. But I did. I'm like, what do you think of? Because revolution has the word revolution, the word evolution, and the word love in it.
Mm-hmm.
What if we divide them into those three categories? And because Nat had come up with the term revolution, that was totally from her. But then I was able to see those categories within it, just out of the blue. Sometimes it takes scaffolding where the author or the authors and we interact back and forth until you can come up with a structure. And it for some reason, it just reveals itself. And I feel that's what's happening with your book.
Yeah, it's it definitely feels like a just kind of a steady escalation or evolution of things with the book. I mean, the other day when you and I were talking and you were kind of telling me the idea of the structure, and then we stumbled across the Valentine's Day kind of theme, or the duplicity of Valentine's Day, you know, I was like, oh, wow, that's actually really funny. Not in a ha-ha way.
No, not funny like a, ha-ha.
Like a poignant, like, wow, okay.
Like, how serendipitous is that? I know we both are kind of on the fence with, you know, I don't want to say spirituality, but more like the religious thing. But sometimes when stuff like that happens and you recognize it, whether it's we're giving it meaning or it is meaningful, mm-hmm. it's there. Like, that was there. So I won't give away too much of it, but I won't. What basically is the beginning, the first chapter that you wrote was on Valentine's 2 years ago.
Yeah.
The incident that you wrote about. And then really what wraps up your story happened on Valentine's, this past Valentine's.
Yeah. Yeah. It was,
so it's like full circle on the same day.
Yeah. It's, and it's, there's such a difference in between kind of who I was, how I was thinking, how I was living the 2 years ago to now, you know, even 200, like I'm at 208 days now. And there's a huge difference in between 208 days ago and now.
Yes.
And it's really some, like I go back and I read some of my stuff that's on my blog, and I scroll through, I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, my son went through and read your old stuff because he really likes your writing. He heard you on Valentine's Day and he said, that guy just takes you there. And then he read your story, The Chairs Are Purple, and he said, he just takes you there. And then he went back and read your old stuff and he said, he likes your old stuff. But my son can be quite dark too with his creative side. Mm-hmm. And I said, it's dark. And he looked at me and said, oh, yeah. He's like, oh, yeah. Yes, it is. And by the way, my son and you are the same generation, right?
So okay. Yeah, yeah.
He's like, oh, yeah. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. It's, it feels
nice. But the difference is there.
Yeah. It feels nice. You know, as much as I thought writing was therapeutic before, it's certainly become that way definitely now. I too at times hang up with my face. Yeah.
So sorry.
No worries there. Just for listeners' sake, there was a hang up. I've pressed pause so they won't actually hear the hang up, but just to let them know something happened.
I hung up with my face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a thing. It does happen.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. I'm just happy you didn't you weren't like in the bathroom, because that would, you know what I mean?
No, not for the podcast.
Exactly. It's like, Heather, you're really echoey. Is there any way, where are you? Are you in like a microwave? Where are you right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. No, I've been known to do this on my children like often. And sometimes most of the time it's my face.
there's a small percentage where it's not.
Maybe. Sometimes. I just might really need to go, oh, sorry, I had to go do something. No, yeah. I hit with my face. Yeah. It depends what kind of mood they're in.
Oh, yeah.
So I sort of forget what you were saying there.
I think we were just talking about the evolution of writing from being really kind of bleak and black and dark to what it is now. And I think I was kind of just saying that, you know, as much as I thought writing was therapeutic before, it was more so at times, depending on what I was writing, it was more re-traumatizing than anything.
Mm.
And my therapist came up with a great terminology. He calls it mm-hmm. trauma porn.
Yeah.
And that's when you just try to slap people in the face with, you know, the harshness of your kind of lived experience. And that's not what I want to do. That's certainly not what I want to promulgate from my writing.
And you've come a long way.
Yeah. I feel, you know, it's funny. It's been 207 or 208 days, and it's not a long time really, but it feels like a lifetime. Because in a lot of ways I feel 180 degrees different.
Well, you've grown a lot, and I'm really proud of you. And I'm proud of a lot of people in this group, to be honest. I'm so lucky. I get to watch people grow. I get to see post-traumatic growth. I guess I've got a cool job. But yeah, no, just to see, I hadn't really been privy to the process and to see people grow. And of course, it's like a roller coaster. There's going to be dips.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Right? But to see, and same thing with Natalie, watching her over the last 2 years, there's dips. There's always dips. But the direction, the general direction, like the stock market mostly, is up, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And it's, yeah, it's the positive deflection is definitely a good thing. That the dips don't quite, they don't fall quite as low anymore.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah.
I actually, speaking of Natalie, I always had this kind of idea, just because she was a paramedic as well and kind of gets the paramedic humor. Right. I'd always thought right. about if there was ever a perfect scenario where she and I could like sit in her car and do a podcast where we're just sitting in the front of her car as if it was the front of the ambulance and just talking
about, that could be funny.
Yeah. About yeah. like medic stuff, not the trauma stuff, but just, converse, because outside of the trauma stuff, it really is an incredible job. And, definitely like I would promote it to anybody who ever wanted to jump into that profession.
It seems to, as an outside observer, it seems to elicit a high percentage of a feeling of purpose.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, I've felt that, especially with you in particular and Natalie. So she turned to me when she won the riding here in Barrie to be city councilor, and she had tears in her eyes and she said, "I finally have a purpose again."
Ah, man, it's incredible.
And I see that with you, with your podcast and how you're reaching out and you're speaking and you're writing. I feel like, from where I'm sitting anyway, I mean, you obviously can speak to this. I feel like maybe you're finding your purpose too.
I'm definitely finding another jacket. Absolutely. There's still a grief within me about not wearing those crests anymore. And every time I see a passing ambulance or I see medics out on the street picking up somebody, or just kind of conversing with one of the homeless people that they deal with, I miss that sense of importance where I never had to go home at the end of the day and wonder what I did.
Right.
Whereas sometimes in my current, you know, life, I kind of go, well, what did I do today? And then I have to sit there and I have to really, really celebrate those small things, like the shower, like Michael Landsberg says, celebrate the shower.
Right.
And
right.
I have to remember that I'm not healthy enough to even contemplate being in that position as a medic. You know,
right.
I wasn't healthy. If idealistically, if I could have gone through Bellwood as a sober person and learned what I learned there, and if I could have gone through and dealt with my therapist for 10, 12 years prior to even being a medic, I think I'd probably be the best medic in the world. Just because of the things that you learn within Bellwood, especially, and how you look at things and how you look at addiction and how that plays a role in people's lives and watching the kind of pernicious role it can take within people's lives.
Right.
As a medic, I always knew and I was privy to seeing it, but there wasn't as much of an understanding empathically
right.
towards it. So I think I would be a lot less judgmental. I think that's probably the best thing I can say is I'd probably be a lot less judgmental as a medic had I gone through and done it, you know, in a healthier mind.
Well, I'm sure that you were a fantastic medic, but I do believe that the scope of what you're doing now could be farther reaching.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is you might not get the feedback. Like as a medic, you see the results of your efforts almost immediately. Like I can't even imagine if you go and find somebody without vital signs and then you leave and they have them. Like what does that do for someone's sense of purpose? That's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty euphoric. When you make a save, as we call it, it's really, you kind of live off of that high for quite some time. And I don't think there's any pharmaceutical equivalency to that
right.
kind of high. It's, one of the biggest smoke and mirror things we do is diabetic emergency. So if somebody's low sugar, We start an IV and we have a drug called D50 or dextrose 50.
Right.
And it's just like a high blast concentration of sugar, but
it looks the
most similar to what you see in movies where they inject you with a needle and you wake up.
Right.
And that's kind of what happens with these diabetics. You know, they're out, people think they're dead. You inject them with this thing and then they start coming to and they start talking. And the next thing you know, they're fully awake and competent and aware of what's going on. And people are just watching, or this person was like, you know, deeply appreciative that you were able to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And there is no equivalency to those things. The sort of thing that I'm getting now is when I had a medic from Texas reach out to me via email. I think I showed you the email from him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he was basically just thanked me for having this podcast and blog.
Yeah.
That's huge. Like, honestly, I sat and I read that for a bit, and that was as close to the same plucking of that cord of meaning as I could have gotten.
Good.
And writing feels good. It feels good not only now, it feels good for me, but it feels... You know, it feels healthy now. It didn't really feel that way before.
Okay. Yeah. I can see that. I mean, to read it before, I would read some of your stuff before, but I read it all of your stuff now. Just because some of the stuff, maybe I wasn't in a place where I could go there that day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but the writing was good. No reflection on the writing. It's just whether or not I felt I could handle it emotionally at that particular moment in time. So, you know, it's an evolution. You're in an evolution, and I'm excited about the book. And, you know, we've got a structure, and you are working away on it. And I'm really excited. It's going to be pretty cool, because I was saying to Natalie actually the other day, even someone who's listened to every single one of your podcasts and read every single one of your blogs, there's stuff in this they will not have known.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? This is more than your blogs. This is more than your podcast. This is, yeah, there's a lot of layers.
There's some stuff in there. Absolutely.
I'm really proud of what you're doing. I think it's fantastic. And even if you don't get that immediate feedback, like your previous career, you kind of had to have a bit of faith that you are having the impact.
Yeah. And for me personally, in a very selfish way, this undertaking, this goal of mine to publish this book or have this book published, which, by the way, thank you for saving me from rejections. That's something I haven't had to experience as of yet. So thank you. but it's a huge goal of mine to have this released for a couple of different reasons. One of the bigger ones was I was standing at the bus stop one day and I was talking to my mom over the phone, and I had just started talking to you via Twitter and learning about the possibility of, I think you were conceptualizing stuff. I can't remember exactly. Or I think you said you reposted one of my blogs. That's what happened. You reposted one of my blogs, and I had said, "Hey, mom, this publishing company retweeted one of my posts. I think I want to write a book."
Oh,
and
wow.
And she said, "Oh, well, I wrote a book when I was younger." I was like, "What? You did?" And she had said, "Yes." And so I'm blown away, because I never knew that my mom wrote anything.
Wow.
And
okay.
Apparently she wrote it when she was in school, and it was called Seaside, is what she told me. And so I told her, I was like, "Well, when I get this book, I'll sign it and send it to you." And she said, "Yeah, I'd really like that." And after my mom, passed away, I have this Word file on my computer, called Seaside, and I've been writing a story about my mom in a fictional sense, kind of a Joan of Arc kind of thing. Her real name was Doris, and she hated that name.
Your mom?
Yeah, she hated
it. I didn't know that.
She would slap me in the ear right now if I had said this. Like, she doesn't know how to roundhouse kick, but she would legit.
Oh, my goodness.
She
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, she hated it. So Joan is how she was known, and that's how yeah. I've always known her. And I remember her talking about Joan of Arc one time, saying that's oh. why she liked that name so much.
Oh wow!
And so I started writing this story about her and about kind of a Joan of Arc character, this really kind of standalone, persevering heroine that you know, that grows up on the seaside. And so it's the first fiction thing that I've ever really kind of been writing. And I dabble into it every now and then. But this book is something that I really want to do because when it does come out, the first copy that I ever sign is going to be for her. And I'll, yeah, I don't know what I'll do with it after that, but the first copy I sign is going to be for her because I said I would.
Wow. That's amazing. You're a good son.
She's a good lady. Good lady. Terrifying at times, but good lady.
Terrifying, but good.
Yeah.
That makes for a good mother.
Yeah.
My kids were scared of me.
By the way, happy International Women's Day to you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. It's,
yes, it is. International Women's Day. And
is.
I know a lot of really fantastic women. So
there are
day to celebrate.
Yeah. There's, I was going to reach out to Courtney too, but I figured that, she might just yell at me today. So,
Is that a regular thing?
Every now and then.
Every now and then. Well, you know, you need that. You need someone to make sure you're in line.
Yeah, I do. She's a great lady.
She's awesome.
Yeah, I really like her a lot, actually.
Yeah.
I like to harass her, but she's incredible.
She's a very witty, smart person.
Yeah, so it's fun.
Yeah.
It's really, going back and forth is a lot of fun because she's very smart and very witty.
Good verbal sparrer.
100%. Yeah, uh-huh. It's a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's good. She helps me sometimes get a little bit grounded. yeah, she's there for me, so I appreciate her.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this group is really special.
Yeah, they are. Everybody.
I know I've kind of said that a few times, but it's very true. Like, I think you nailed a perfect mix of people.
If only it was on purpose. Only if I knew what formula was used, because it's amazing.
I think it's even better that it's, as you said, serendipitous. I think it's yeah. even better that way.
Yeah, it feels like family.
For sure, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's kind of been going for about an hour here. Is there anything that you...
Sorry. Ooh, that's a long time.
No, don't be sorry at all. It's been a great time, but... there is a book signing coming up soon. Do you want to talk about that briefly?
Well, the date might change, so I'm not sure. There will be one in April, probably April, in Woodbridge. So if people can check out, Brainstorm Revolution has a Facebook page now for the not-for-profit, because we also have a not-for-profit that does the speaking. So if anyone wants to follow facebook.com/brainstormrevolution, then we will be posting the signings there as well. So when I know the exact date, we did have a date, but some conflicts came up, so we're going to have to change it. But yeah, Woodbridge is the next one.
Excellent, excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, the book signings are a lot of fun. I really enjoy them.
They are, and the speaking is going to continue. We're going to be at the CMHA conference in May for the Toronto chapter workplace.
Awesome.
We're going to be keynoting. I don't know if you know that you're going to be speaking.
I'm more than happy to partake. There'll be no whale farts in this one, I promise.
So if anyone, it's online. I think anyone can buy tickets for this particular event. It's a 2-day event.
Okay.
We're there on the 14th and put on by the wonderful CMHA. So come on out and meet you.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
So again, quickly before I let you go, so this is episode 100 of the podcast.
Awesome.
And the reason that I had asked you if you wanted to partake in it was because you were there for me on day one. And it just seemed fitting that on day 100, which is kind of a milestone in any sort of things that people do, whether it's a podcast or whether it's sobriety or whatever the case may be, it's a big kind of milestone number, and it felt fitting to have this woman that I talk about fairly often throughout the podcast as my friend and as my publisher and as kind of this entity throughout story sometimes. It felt fitting to have you on, and I can't be more appreciative of the fact that you were willing to do it. And I, from the bottom of my heart, I say thank you very much for doing this for me. Thank you.
Well, it is absolutely my pleasure, and I so appreciate you asking. And I've said it, I don't know, 100 times now. It is episode 100, so maybe 100 times is appropriate. I'm really, really, really proud of you.
Thank you.
Really, thank you. Really proud of you. So thank you. Gratitude towards you, absolutely.
That's awesome. So if people want to follow you on social media platforms, or if they say they had if they want to reach out to you in any sort of way, how would they do that?
Well, on Twitter, I think I'm at Winter Tickle. It's like the season and the word tickle together. It's actually a pond in northern Newfoundland, if anyone wants to know how I came up with that crazy name. But it's at Winter Tickle is the Twitter. And then Facebook, I think it's Winter Tickle Press. There's also winterticklepress.com is our main page. And all of our general trade books are available on Indigo and Chapters and Amazon.
Awesome.
So any way possible, please feel free to reach out. And also, they can follow you at The Medic's Mind now, right, on Facebook?
I have a Facebook page called The Medic's Mind. They can find it there. I generally post some. I obviously post some of the Brainstorm Revolution stuff, just because I'm you know, gracious and humble to be a part of that. I post like my blog posts and my podcasts up there too.
I think I have an Instagram account, but I have no idea because I don't think I think I've posted 3 things on it.
Yeah.
It might be Winter Tickle. I don't know. It might be Winter Tickle Press. I don't remember. I'm a little bit older, so the social media thing, a little bit of a challenge trying to catch up.
Yeah, but you're doing just fine. Yeah.
Thank you. You're very kind. My son tells me otherwise every day. He's in a marketing program right now, and he comes home and he tells me everything that I should be doing. I'm like, go ahead. I give it to you to do.
I give it to you. This could be your project.
Yes, but he doesn't. He won't. He's too busy, he says.
Yeah.
Just wait until the term is over. No excuses. So.
All right. Well, Heather,
thank you so much. Thank you. All righty.
All right. Take care. And I will speak to you very soon, I'm sure.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.